Okay, so we're going to be delving into probably one of the most important topics I feel ever, and that is the topic of shame. Shame, which is bullshit, right? Shame. So even when we say that word, shame, right? Shame on you. We feel that. We feel that from our kindergarten teacher, from our parents, grandparents, and whoever else is there waving that big finger at you, right? And that feeling and that vibration is probably the lowest vibration that we have. Right? The feeling of shame is the lowest vibration that we have, and it is something that we are rectifying, that we are fixing. We're here in this world to fix shame. And this is what I'd like to talk about tonight. Oh. So we ask ourselves, where does shame really come from? What is the origin of shame, right? That type of a vibration, which is so deeply entrenched in our psyche as human beings, right? It's something that we all feel. It's something that hampers us, that stops us. It's something that is something that we're trying to run away from, yet it's something that we have just by the virtue of us being born in a human form, right? We have shame. Where does shame really come from? So Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, there in the basking in the tree of life, right? After the fall of man, we could say, where Adam and Chava failed and they tasted from the external reality and the place of duplicity, the place of separation. At that point, Adam realized he is not his previous self. There's a separation due to that schism, due to that separation that happened. And at that point, there is God that is asking Adam, Ayeka, where are you?
After the shame?
After, no, that is the shame.
Oh, that's the shame.
Right? Adam falls for the curiosity, the way the Arizal puts it, that the sin, the primordial sin, is really a sin of curiosity. Where the curiosity went a little too far and it became the reality. And we're going to be talking about that, like, because this week's special Torah portion that we read is Parshat Parah, which is the Parsha that has to do with purity. And shame very much relates to the fixing of purity. Coming back to that purity, because Adam and Eve were pure, right? They were immaculate. They were completely white in their, whole essence. There was no negativity. They were created in the image of God. But that outer force, the way the Arizal says it, that force of asking what is on the other side. Right? What is there? That curiosity sparked within Adam that external fall, which ensued, the external fall. Welcome, yeah, right now. That external fall was the external fall of basically of shame, of going into the state of I did something wrong and I am flawed. I am bad, right? And again, that primal place of God basically asking Adam, Ayeka, where are you? Is that primal feeling that we have inside of our DNA as humans of feeling shame. Basically, am I really bad? Or am I not? So the identification with the shame, the identification of I am bad, is also part of the problem, right? Whereas God surely is not part of the problem. So if God is waving his finger, like in a sense, and he's saying, like, Ayeka, is it supposed to put us in that decadent, negative spiral of, again, I am bad? Or is there something positive that is also there? And so I know that there's a tremendous amount of literature that has come out very, we could say recently in the last, I would say 5, 6, 7 years, maybe 10 years in research in psychology, and especially from researchers such as Brené Brown, who I'm a fan of. I you know, and I've read many of her books and her writings, and I definitely think that that she is a trailblazer in that type of communication that needs to happen within us. In other words, the part that's within us that's desensitized, that is perfect, that is shameful, versus the part of us that is potential, that is good, that is wholehearted, right? There's a lot of research about that, and I'm going to share some of it, but I want to really concentrate on the concept of shame based on the Torah teachings, because the word for shame in Hebrew is boshet, which is the letters bet, right? Shin, taf, boshet. Boshet means shame in Hebrew, right? Busha, right, is embarrassment, right? And yet, the words boshet is also the letters for Shabbat, right? So the Zohar actually says that we've got 70 permutations of the word Bereshit. One of the permutations brought down in Tikkuni Zohar, in the seventh one, is Bereshit is Yare boshet. The awe of shame. So God created the world, Bereshit, Yere, Boshet, the awe or the fear of shame. And another one of the Tikkuni Zohar says Yere Shabbat. The same letters, once again, it's interchangeable. And so just one more Mishnah that's brought down in, it's actually a Mishnah that we repeat quite a lot in the Siddur and in our practice, and that is the Mishnah of Yehuda ben Tema. And they say he was a famous Tana, he's actually buried not far from here. Yehuda ben Tema says that a person should be fearless as a leopard, strong like a lion, right? To do the will of Hashem. As panim la geinom, You should be like ferocious, right? Against going to purgatory, that reality of, right? Boshet panim legan eden, and be have this sense of boshet, of literally, I'm just translating it as embarrassment, to go into paradise. So it must be, if the words Bereshit has within it Yarei Boshet, God created the world so that we should have Boshet. And Yehuda ben Tema says in the Mishnah, right, that Boshet legan Eden, like we want to go into paradise, we need to have Boshet. That means that shame, or at least Boshet, is not necessarily a bad thing. Right? So in the research of Brené Brown, she actually says that she believes, and she writes in the opinions of many of her researchers, that shame is not good in any way. Right? And that's the way she basically puts it in her book. Okay, I'll come back to that. But she says, boshet or shame is not good in any way. Yet in our writings, it's not daring greatly. No, it is something with imperfection. It's actually like a shorter type of a book. The gifts of imperfection. Imperfection. That's it. It's a short, good read. But she writes over there that that again, shame is something that most researchers believe is something which is negative, right? Yet in our writings, right, shame, at least the word itself, boshet, is not necessarily a negative thing, right? And I'd like to speak about that a little bit more. And so the difference between guilt and shame, actually she writes it over there, the difference between guilt and shame, does someone want to take a chance of distinguishing between the two, right? Because we have guilt, and there's a lot, usually there's something called Jewish guilt, that your mother, your grandmother, whatever it is, will bring it into you. Abigail?
Guilt is when you do something wrong and you feel bad about it. Shame is that you are wrong.
Exactly.
And there's nothing really you can do about it.
That's perfectly said, right? Guilt is I did something wrong. Shame is I'm inherently bad, right? I'm inherently flawed, right? The difference is vast. And the difference is basically shame is being stuck in our past, whereas guilt is the focus towards the future, if done right. Right? Which is where the whole mishkababa of what shame actually is really takes us to. Because there's the inherent negativity, which is felt, which actually is the whole basis of really of Christianity. That man is born in sin. So if you'd speak to any Christian out there, right? I'm not knocking anyone's belief, but I'm just quoting facts that Christianity is rooted in this inherent shame, that man is created in sin. And that means that no matter what they're going to do, they are flawed. Humanity is flawed. and stuck there. Versus the view of, right, of, we'll call it Judaism, we'll call it unbiased, you know, way of looking at the Bible, at the script. And that is that the creation of man was a mistake. And certainly if we understand the deeper aspects of it, such as the Kabbalistic, the Arizal's notion that the whole notion, that the whole reason for the sin was a curiosity that happened, or that man has, and the curiosity then caused man to want to search. And therefore that brought him basically to the wrong places, right? It's the stories that we read when we're little kids in kindergarten, you know, it's like, right? And all the fairy tale stories, and then you go deep into the forest and there's that witch over there that caught you, and, you know, and there's, right? And it's very much entrenched in us, right? When we read those stories and we grow up on those fairy tales, that the sin itself or the exploration starts off as an exploration, but it turns out in being like a nightmare, is something that is very much a fear that we have. Versus trying something out and actually noticing where the mistake is and where I can be, which is what guilt is. Guilt is, I could get down on myself for that. I'm beating myself and I'm saying I'm inherently bad, but is that helping the situation? Is that actually fixing anything in the long run? Or is it just damaging me, right? Even more than what happened, which is what the great Hasidic master said, that more than the sadness that happens after the sin, sorry, more than the sin itself, right? The mistake itself is the sadness that ensues after the sin, after the mistake. So we get down on ourselves and we say, I've done this. I am so bad. How many times have we done that? Oh, I forgot my keys and I'm so this, right? We're used to thinking that way. We're used to feeling that. I am that. And so boshet is really a two-edged type of a word. That boshet in its root is really Shabbat, is really bringing us to our greatest potential if we allow the learning from the guilt. Then we could actually live in our Shabbat, in our bliss, in our paradise, in our higher zone, which is where Adam, right, was and where we are potentially. Versus there's the boshet, which is the other paradigm, which takes us down, which infuses us with, I'm inherently flawed. I'm inherently born in sin, and therefore there's no hope. So when do we have the hope? That's the big question.
Something good. Did you say it's connected to the guilt? We are learning how to work with the guilt.
Yes. So then we could uplift it. And if not, then it becomes down. It becomes, it's found in our bodies. It's somatically found in our beings. We feel inherently triggered all the time, right? And so how do we release that? Because very much just one more point after that Mishnah that I mentioned of Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema says, after that Mishnah, it says, Yihi Ratzon, it should be your will that the temple should be built in this time and that we should be in the state of redemption. And I found that very, very incredible that right after the statement of shame, right, Boshet Panim le Gan Eden, it says over there, Yihi Ratzon, let it be your will that we should be in the state of paradise. In other words, it started with shame and it's going to end with shame. Like we've come out of paradise in the state of shame, and we're going to come back to paradise from the state of correcting that sense of shame. So what is that? What is that correction that is done? And so this week's Torah portion, or the additional Torah portion, is para, is the Torah portion of the red heifer, where we come to a place of purity before we start off with Passover. So we've got four different specific readings that we do during this time. Right now we're in the third one, and it has to do with purity. So it has to do with the red heifer. So the red heifer is very much in the news lately, because I think they've found a number of red heifers, and Rivka maybe one. In a good way. they've found a number of red heifers, and the red heifer really represents, in the Torah, it represents, there's three different aspects with the red heifer. So the first aspect with the red heifer is that the red heifer needs to be completely burnt, right? It's slaughtered and then it's burnt. And then there's water which is poured upon it. And there are two types of, there's a tree which is called an Erez, which is like a cedar type of a tree, and a very small type of an herb, which is zatar, right? It's close to the oregano type of a small,
hyssop. Isn't hyssop. It hyssop?
Thank you. Yeah. Exactly. It's a hyssop. And vetolat shani, and then there's a certain type of a worm, vetolat, and that is able to purify someone who is defiled by a dead corpse, which doesn't make sense at all. And in fact, that's something which King Solomon says. That's something which is a chok. That is something which is super rational, and we don't understand. Yet, I'd like to share with you a brief idea by the Alter Rebbe that he explains this concept in a way that's relatable to what we're talking about with boshet, with embarrassment, etc. And so these three elements represent the following. So the idea of the burning of the red heifer, right? What does that represent? So the Alter Rebbe explains that the universe, right, our physical universe is comprised, and spiritual as well, is comprised of four elements. And these four elements are fire, water, right? We've got air, and we've got earth. So where does when we burn something, when something is completely consumed and we take it to the ashes, so the word for ashes in Hebrew is efer, which is also the letters for pe'er, for wonder. And the ashes are relegated and they're brought down to their essential core, right, of nothingness, right, of self. So beforehand, there may have been a structure of some sort, but when there's ashes, it just comes back to something that is not really there anymore, right? And so he explains this in regards to the red heifer. And he says that the idea of the red heifer or the cow or the animal or the ox in that sense represents the desire, right? The will of what we call the animal soul or the ego, right? That has this will and desire. And that's the cow. That's the desire of the cow. And the cow, the ox, the desire of the ox, right, needs to be purified and uplifted. But how is it purified and uplifted? So the thing is that the other elements, such as the fire, water, and air, are potentially external, right? They're exploratory. They have caused the person to, you know, to fall into one of those elements, right? The element of water is very much like a soothing element, and it's something that one wants to, like, a fiery, right? There's people that are fiery and that they want to follow that element. There's the element of air, of going out there. But when you come back to it, at the end of the day, that desire, that ox, and in its core, that ox is really good, right? There's something positive. There's something good about that essential being. So the essential being is represented by the ashes. Right? Because that's the essential self that one has. And of course, like in Indian culture, in Hinduism, etc., there's the idea of the ashes that are taken, that are burnt, and after a person in their lifetime, those ashes are taken on the right in the Ganges River, right? And they're spread over there. And that's not a Jewish practice at all. But it is a very much of a spiritual concept. And the spiritual concept is true, that the fact is that our essence is really found in the ashes, or what that represents, right? That represents really our deepest potential, because the word for ashes in Hebrew is efer, but this is where the Indians got it wrong, because we've got the magical godly Hebrew language, where the words efer in Hebrew is also the letters for pe'er, which is wonder. Right. And that, so it's not just the ashes, but the ashes bring us to a wondering, but the greatest level of wondering. So in our potential, we're curious, we're wonderful, we could say, right? We have this, because that's what it is. Efer is afar, but it also is pe'er, which is wonderful. So all of us are really wonderful. And it's not just a wonderful thing to say. It is a truth, right? It is a wonderfully true thing to say, because that's really who we are. Because in our essence, each and every one of us is completely wonderful, right? So when we come back to that place, to that essence, we are absolved, we're forgiven, of what we did wrong, because we may have not been so wonderful and being a little bit like too curious, we could say, and we may have deviated, which is what actually sin means in Hebrew, to deviate. Like chet means like you've just missed the mark. But it's not you. You're not flawed. You're not bad. But you just, you know, right? Which is that big distinction. The distinction is that we are not born in sin, that we are essentially wonderful, that essentially we are a godly soul, that essentially we're made in the image of God, which is why one is supposed to be buried right after 120 in their full self, right? And that's the Jewish burial, which is a very, very important thing, which is a very big thing that, you know, we don't want to, many of us don't want to think about, but it is a very important thing, because that is, that actually preserves us not only in our death, but preserves us in our life. And that's a very, very profound distinction between Judaism, again, and Hinduism and Buddhism, right? And Christianity, right? This is like where we're in this place of we're born in the with the image of God. That means that when God is waving his finger at us and saying, Ayeka, what is God really saying? He's not saying, oh, you naughty little boy, I'm going to take you to the, and you're going to get a whipping. And but God is saying, wow, you're here. I feel for you. But yet I believe in you. And that level of, we could say, love, which is a little bit of a tough love, is not really tough love, because that's really the greatest level of love. It's saying, I believe in you so much that I'm actually taking the time and the not so fuzzy feeling to come to really express that to you. Because a good friend is not someone that's going to be with you when everything is good. But a good friend is going to come to you and you're going to fight with them. And you're going to like want them to go away. But that friend, but that person is still going to be with you, and you're going to cry together. But that's a true friend. And that's where you, that's where we really learn. We really learn in that place. And after the fall of man, right, from paradise, we're all, that's how we learn. We really learn from the experience of falling. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. We don't learn just from the going up. We learn from the falling. Okay, here we go, another one. This is me. But that's the thing. That's not you. That's the big distinction. The negativity, the sin, is not you. The experience of being human is you, but the ability to learn is godly.
So when Hashem is saying Ayeka, it's not like he's finding force in our action, but it's more like he's telling us, show yourself, or like be
exactly
potential. Show me how you can rise from that.
Exactly.
This is it.
Yes.
So why did Adam get it wrong? Why do we get it wrong then?
This is what we need to correct. This is exactly what we need to correct. We need to release shame, the negative shame, and embrace positive shame. We don't even call it shame, because it's not shame, because that in the Hebrew language, which is the holy tongue, is they don't call it shame. It's called Boshet, which is the same letters as Shabbat, which means like we are already whole. That's a very big distinction. We're already whole. So are we coming from the place I'm broken? Or I'm coming from a place I'm whole? That's Geula. That's redemption. To be in the place of whole. Avigail?
I was thinking about how God says, "Where are you?" and Shabbat. And I relate it to playing hide and seek with my grandson. Mm-hmm. And when he hides, I mean, I know where he is, but I pretend I don't know. And what I express is, oh, such fear, because now I can't hug him. I can't show my love. And when we experience Shabbos, we're not distracted with our work because we don't work on Shabbos. So we can really feel God is loving us. So it's like God is giving us a hug. Mm-hmm. So really, when God is saying, "Where are you?" God is really saying, "I want to give you a hug, but I don't know where you are, so now I can't hug you."
Not yet. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So yeah, come close. I want to give you a hug. That's what God is saying. Right. You know, I just saw it in a different way.
That's beautiful, because that's also very true, because when to actually give a hug is a very big thing, because most people, or I say a lot of people, don't know how to give hugs or are uncomfortable in hugging, right? Because usually there's like the hug, which is like this, the right.
Don't burp me.
Yeah, the burping, the tapping, but to really hug someone is to embrace them from both sides and to feel their heart and to hold it for 20 seconds, ideally. Then your heart and their heart are connected. That interaction is incredible.
With a small child, they don't have the embarrassment. They're so pure in their love. Yes. So when they're not afraid to come close, and you can totally envelop them in your arms and give them everything you got. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so beautiful about
it. And it reminds us to be more like that. You know, to be more of that pure of heart, right? That purity. That's mm-hmm. this week's right portion. Para. So we take the
My other question is totally different. What is the significance of the red heifer being red?
Mm.
So and also, if you can repeat what people say in the class, because I can't hear.
Yes.
When they make comments. Thank you.
The red heifer represents din or gevura, which is intensity. And intensity in its source is not bad, but intensity the way it is expressed outside, right, is negative. And that's why, so that takes us to the burning of the red heifer, right? And then there's water, talk about that in a second. But then there's a tree which is called an Erez tree. So Erez in numerology is 208, which is the same numerology as Yitzchak, which is Gevura. So there's the fixing of Gevura, fixing of 208 in the positive sense. In other words, what's Gevura? Yitzchak is basically saying that I am great, because that's what Erez is. The cedar tree is the tallest tree, right? Sequoia trees, you think about them, right? It's a variation. and they're very, very tall, and they're strong. That's an it's Erez, the same numerology as Yitzchak, as Gvura. So the Paraduma is completely red, but it's fixing that red and replacing it with a feeling of what we call Azutik Dusha, of a feeling of going for it, ferociousness of Kedusha, because there's the ferociousness of the other side, of like, I'm going to go, and then that leads us, where did I just go? I am bad. What am I even doing? And then there's what we could do, and that stops us over there. It stops us in what we could do, because we've sort of proven to ourselves, at least in our mind, that we've done this and we are inherently bad. Again, shame and flawed and whatnot. And what do we do now? And so the same numerology as that big tree that's meant to be there in that experience of the red heifer is the numerology of Yitzchak, the numerology of the fixing of that experience, which there could be the negative harshness that we have towards ourselves primarily. It's not even what others, which is, it's not even what others say about us. We have that playing in our minds over and over and over again. Why? Because shame has just become like this stereo, right, playing, which is just, it's the same thing, which is going on, which happened, whatever, in second grade and third grade, wherever that was, and that we could say, we call it trauma, was injected, right? Which is that place of the really of the sin of Adam and sin of the snake and whatnot, of where that feeling of flaw was felt. The release of that is the release that is connected to Yitzchak of Erez. But first, it also says Tola, Tolat. We also have the humility of this worm, and the humility is the humility of, it says that Tola is the same numerology of the Ana Bekoach Gdulat Yemincha Tatir Tzeurah. It's the same numerology of Tola that, yeah, Tola, Tolat. Okay. Mm-hmm. That it says about the worm. Now we, King David says about himself, I am but a worm. Right? Anochi tolat. He says, who calls themselves a worm? Like, that's not such a nice sounding thing. So the Talmud says that what is the idea of the worm? That the worm, the only way it's saved is by its mouth. And so too, the Jewish people, the only way that we are saved is by our mouth.
Saved. Not falling.
So which means what? It's tefillah, it's prayer. What's the way that we can release ourselves of that state of mind and that place of being stuck is asking God for the ability to rise above it and to recognize and to observe the pattern, right? Which is what the water is. So there's two parts of it. There's the burning of the red heifer, but then there is the watering of this water that comes from the temple, and the water represents, the Alter Rebbe says, it represents wisdom, the flow of wisdom, of awareness that one has, right? Which is the major distinction between negative shame, which has no distinction, versus Shabbat type of boshet, where we are connected, which has awareness. and that's the water. So there's in our core, there's that ashes, there's that essence of who we are. In other words, we are inherently good and pe'er, we have that. But we have to discover that and cultivate that. Because deep down, we don't believe that. Because the negativity speaks louder than the positive little voice that's inside. The positive little voice is very quiet. And the loud critical voice is very, very loud.
So we need to do something like that.
So we have to stop and we have to say, hold on. I'm taking like a reassessment of what is actually happening. Is this actually real, or is it just like guilt, or is it just a farce? You know what I'm saying? Like, am I really that, or is it just the voice of my mother? Right? Is it right? Let me just listen, and let me just observe, and let me just, you know, try to feel it. Where is it actually coming from? And that's the water, right? So there's the taking accounting, which is almost like very cut and dry, which is really observation, which in meditation, why most people do not connect to meditation is because they say it's so boring. Because in meditation, you're for to really meditate and to get into the world of meditation, you're observing the patterns. That's what meditation really is. To observe the patterns.
Is there a difference between guilt and remorse?
Between guilt and remorse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much connected to that. Guilt is supposed to bring, actually in Judaism, the Rambam writes that teshuva is the first thing of like what we call like returning. Right, fixing something is contingent upon actually feeling what was wrong. But it's feeling and identifying with it and then going on with it, as opposed to constantly living by that same mistake, which is wrong, right? And there's a beautiful teaching, and I saw this brought down from the Sfat Emet and in different places. It says, after Yom Kippur, we pray the evening prayer, and in that prayer, the Amida prayer, we ask for forgiveness. So after a full day of asking God for forgiveness, on the night after that, right, in the place of Slach Lanu, we say, God, forgive me. What have you already managed to do? Right? It's just been, you know, Yom Kippur. It's just, the shofar was just, like, and then you're saying, God, forgive me. What did you do wrong? You couldn't have done anything wrong that much. So that thought you may have... So the answer is that we thought that God didn't really forgive us. That's the sin. That's the mistake. That we don't truly believe that God forgave us. We don't believe that God truly forgave us. Because if we really believe that God, which he does, and we're not forgiving ourselves, and that's really the work. Because from God's playbook, he's saying, you're already there. I'm just waiting for you to figure it out. It's like that loving parent that's pushing you along. Right? It's not you are bad, which is basically the problem, I think, in all of humanity, is that is faulty parenting, where we give that over to the next generation and that's instilled in them and they don't know any other thing because it's already instilled pattern. And we fix that, right? That is Boshet Panim Legan Eden, because we want to come to paradise, Shabbat, but we come to Shabbat where we fully appreciate that, you know, that whole experience, but we've got to do some work to really experience that. But the work doesn't always have to be this Sisyphean trivial work and negative work and self talking, right? Negatively talking type of a language, which we're used to. We're used to the self bashing, where I am that, or I'm only worth something if I do something, at least something measurable by someone that is watching me, which is not even me, and something that's measuring me, that's, I don't even know who's measuring me. And that is keeping us in such a sad box. State of reality, right? It's that box of being perfect, basically. Whereas by the authenticity of actually being honest with who we are and what we are and the struggles that are realistically happening versus, you know, the myths of those, you know, those feelings that nobody's going to understand at all, because, you know, we're inherently stuck in those paradigms. When those are released, right? So then we have Mashiach. Mm-hmm. We have Shabbat. The world is waiting for healing. And that healing is this exact healing. Because why would someone want to do something negative to someone else if they don't feel that horrible inside?
This whole Israel now, read by Cohen.
Well, Israel is already blessed, and we are all, and this is intense, but it is actually very, very simple, and that really is the truth, that we don't have to take that seriously, and as reality, right? Because reality is that those patterns are not really us, right? And we could let them go. Like, we could, like, really let them go, and we could allow new patterns, such as Shabbat, as our new patterns, right? That's the new way that we really are. We're absolutely not stuck by that, because in our essence, we're pure. We're paraduma, right? We empire is actually like also gvura is, but we're able to bring in, we're able to transform, we're able to allow that truth that is We're not stuck by the past, right? Mm-hmm. We are privileged to have the present, right? And the future. And again, like anything that is happening and that's keeping you in the past, that is shame. And you can release that, right? Now is really an opportunity to really release that. And what is the present moment and the future is Shabbat, is the higher level of potentiality. Where